This is the Featured Business of the Week on LM Communications Media. This week, our guests, Matt Christensen of Truly Nolan Pest Control and Critter Control of Lexington. Hello, Matt. How are you?
I am well. Thank you all for having me.
I'm with my partner, Alan Stein. Alan, what's up?
Not much, my brother. I'm glad to see you back in the saddle.
I am standing and roaring.
Well, standing is a relative term, I guess, but roaring for sure. Good deal.
Well, it's good to have Matt out here. Dr. Christensen, the owner, is not with us today, but that'll be all right. You can carry the thing.
But the guy who does all the work is here.
So
we're in good shape here. We've got a number of questions for you, Matt, but just as an overall perspective as we get into our conversation today, you know, here we are, very, very hot weather that we've been experiencing. It's kind of mild for a few days, and then it's going to get hot again.
Right.
Talk to us about how that impacts what we're seeing in our homes.
Well, you know, insects, just like humans, depend on three things to live: food, water, and shelter. And when we're having this extreme heat, yes, we have these massive downpours of rain like we've experienced, which bring the cooler weather for a day or two.
Right.
But they will move into a home for many reasons. One is, if there are torrential downpours, they don't survive in that, so they want to get to higher ground just like anything else. So they'll find cracks and crevices in the foundation around doors and windows, and they can crawl inside.
Well, that's an interesting point right there. Mm-hmm. So when heavy rains come, it wipes out part of the insect population?
Not necessarily. They tend to kind of have a sixth sense about some of that stuff. We've actually seen where, before heavy rains, I've seen where ants may start moving their brood, eggs, larvae, and things like that, to higher ground.
No kidding.
Yeah,
did you know that?
No, not
I
at all.
I didn't know that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's why I love having Matt come in. This is interesting stuff.
Interesting facts that you would never know otherwise. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but, you know, most of these ants, they nest inside of the ground. Their colony is going to be inside of the soil. And so when we have these rains come by, if they're not in a very good protected area, those rains are going to come down in there, and they're going to start flooding them. So they are on the move. We see that a lot after heavy rains as well. Odorous house ants are well known for doing that. They will move into a structure, get inside your wall voids or down in the crawl space or something like that. And most of the time, they're not going to move back out because they are well protected. They're not having to deal with the rains anymore. They've got food and water supplies nearby. So they got everything they need in that house.
Wow. So we're in good shape for the insects. That's why we've got you to help manage the situation for
us.
Well, let's ask a few questions here, just kind of get rolling.
Sure.
We've heard you talk about a four-season service, and that's sort of what we do here. You come in once a quarter and tell us what's going on, what's specific to that time of year.
Right.
Tell us exactly what you define as a four-season service.
All right. So for our Four Seasons summer service, just like any of our four-season services, our technicians are going to come out. If the homeowner is there, they'll speak to them about any issues they're having so that we can address that. The first actual part of the service is they're going to go around with a Webster brush on a long pole, and we're going to start taking down spider webs around the soffits, windows, and doors. If we see like Polistes or paper wasp nests, we can take those down as well using this brush. We're going to kind of clean up the exterior that way. We're taking down the cobwebs, the nests, things that can take away from the beauty of the home. Sometimes people don't even realize they have spiders up there or wasps building in the corner of a window.
Until it gets really big.
Yeah. Or if they happen to come outside and slam the door and there's one right above them, and then they get zapped by a few wasps.
And then, of course, what too many people do incorrectly is they light a little torch and they try to burn it down and they get stung. That's crazy, isn't it?
That is not a bright move on many different levels. Yes, you can cause serious damage to your own home before you do damage to the wasps. So yes, I would not recommend using fire.
But you've seen it.
There's horror stories all over the place out there. I mean, you can see it on the news. You know, man sets fire to his house trying to kill a spider with a hairspray and a lighter, you know, something silly. Like
I used
that.
To do that when I was a kid, but,
right?
You know,
not inside
now.
Your room though.
That was
though.
For fun.
Yeah,
that wasn't pest maintenance.
Not pest
maintenance. Perfect. That's well said. So we go around the house. We want to take down those webs and wasp nests, et cetera, et cetera. We do apply a short term residual insecticide to the head. So as we're we're taking these things down, we have an insecticide that's going over top of that area to help kind of repel those insects and arachnids from those areas. After that, we're going to go around with our compressed hand sprayer, and we're going to hit hot, what we call hot spots around the doors and window frames, little cracks and crevices, areas of common entry for, you know, flies, beetles, ants, things like that. So they've got to go through a treated zone before they get into the house. After we've completed that, go around, all the way around the home, we're going to put down a layer of liquid residual around the base of the home. So we're going to apply this material about 1 foot up the foundation wall, and then also about a foot or so away from the wall. Again, so crawling insects can go through this treated zone and won't have long to live after that.
Right.
Once we've completed that, just to backtrack, we also make sure that we are not going to be hitting any flowering shrubs, bushes, plants, things like that, because we love pollinators. We do love honeybees and wasps and carpenter bees and things like that. They do provide a great service. So we don't want to have that become a detrimental situation. So we avoid flowers. But we after we've got that third layer of treatment down, we go outside of that liquid zone and we apply a granular bait. This is just a general insecticide bait. A bunch of different insects can feed on this. It's a stomach poison. It will kill those insects. So typically works best on ants, exterior roaches like Pennsylvania wood roaches, things like that. A number of beetles, crickets, grasshoppers, things like that are going to feed on this and help knock them out. So the whole idea behind the four season service is these insects and arachnids have to go through multiple treated zones to be able to get to your home. And it's not likely they're going to get inside the home alive. And if they
that's
do,
like a big obstacle course.
Right. Yeah. So they unknowingly are going through these areas, getting in contact with more and more insecticide. So the whole idea is if they get inside your home, they shouldn't be lasting very long after that. And you really should not have to worry about infestations of large numbers of these insects.
Right.
And by the four seasons, you guys actually do things differently each season to treat the different areas.
Right. We will employ different chemical to fit the, I guess, the pest pressure that we have on the house. So like in the spring and the fall, we use a non-repellent exterior liquid treatment. And what that means, that really is focused towards the ants. Ants go through this material. They don't know they're going through a chemical. They get it on their bodies. So they're very social insects. So when they get back to each other, they communicate by touching antennae. They groom each other. They rub bodies as they're passing each other inside of the colony. So they're unwittingly passing this chemical along as well. And if they've gotten to our bait, they're going to bring that granular bait down into the colony to distribute amongst the hierarchy. And what we want to do is we're trying to kill the queen with that. So you kill the queen and any other secondary reproductives, and you can help wipe out that colony that
way. So the queen would rub antennae with others?
No, others come and rub her antennae.
Yeah, okay.
They take care of her. Okay. Yes, yes.
The queen's the queen.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Come here, let me rub your antenna.
They come in and they take care of her. They make sure she's comfortable so that she can go on with egg production. That's her main goal.
Right.
Now, well, let's talk about ants for a little bit. In our area, there's all kinds of different ants. What are the keys to controlling the different kinds of ants? Or is there a one-size-fits-all?
To a certain degree, there's a one-size-fits-all for a number of ants. We have a number of different ants that can be found inside and outside of a home or business around here in central Kentucky. The main ones that we deal with on a regular basis are going to be pavement ants, odorous house ants, carpenter ants, which everybody knows what those are. And then there's some lesser known ones around here, like the acrobat ant and the little black ant. People often go, well, why do they call it that? Why did they get that name? Entomologists have no imagination. Literally, they see where an ant is located, and that's what they call it. They see a pavement ant. Why? Because they saw it on pavement or the mound coming out from the cracks in the sidewalk. That's a pavement ant.
So the gymnastic ant, was that a gymnastic ant?
The acrobat ant.
At a gymnastics
ant. The gymnastics ants, yes. Like little black ants. People always say, why do they call them that? Because they're super tiny, and they're black in color, and they're an ant. Literally, that's why they're called.
When I was growing up in Florida, we had red ants down there.
Yes.
Why do you
yes.
call them red ants? Let them sting you.
Yeah, a fire ant. Why do they call them a fire ant? You don't want to know.
That's
yeah.
right.
So these are some of the most common structure-infesting ants that we deal with. So we utilize a number of different methods, and we're usually going to be using gel or granular-based baits, and we're also going to be using a liquid chemical to use on them. So we prefer the non-repellents, so again, they don't realize they're walking through a treated zone. They're bringing this gel or granular bait down into the colony to distribute to everybody. So the queen gets the first taste, and then it's distributed to everybody else after that. So you start knocking out the population that way. So you should see reduction in numbers inside of the home. And basically what we're doing is we're utilizing their biology against them. They're foraging for food. We're providing them a special, quote, food
right.
to bring in and do the work for us.
So that's baiting.
That is baiting.
So what is spraying?
Then? Spraying is the application of a liquid chemical. That could be, we have two different kinds in pest control world. It's either repellent or non-repellent. And repellent is supposed to have a chemical that they can pick up on and help steer them clear of those areas. Now, ants are very persistent. They follow a pheromone line. So when you see them trailing along a house or going out into a driveway or whatever, they're following a specific pheromone laid down by the others saying, follow this route. And so, you know, if you want to have silly fun, go see a trail of ants. Put down a rock or a stick right in front of them. If you've ever seen, what was it, A Bug's Life? You know, there's a scene in there where a leaf falls down in the line that they're following, and the ants freak out, and it's almost true like that in real life. So they'll find a way around it or something like that. So they'll go through the chemical no matter what. And, again, they're picking that up on their body, and then they're transferring right. that to each other.
I got you.
Yeah.
Skip, you had a question about mosquitoes.
But they just finished spraying for mosquitoes this morning, as a matter of fact, in a couple of zip codes here in Lexington. Okay. Now, do you treat for mosquitoes, and what are some of the common breeding places to look out for outside of standing water? We've learned standing water is the worst.
That is what we're looking for. Those are the breeding grounds, the stagnant water that can be found, and they can be found in many different locations. Commonly, you'll find them in buckets that have not been turned over. So if you got a 5-gallon bucket out there collecting rainwater, you'll find the little wrigglers in there. The larvae live in the water. The female mosquito plants eggs on the water. So they're an aquatic animal, or aquatic insect, rather. So, again, buckets, tires, kids' toys, that are anything that can collect water will have that stagnant water.
And does it take a lot of volume, or it can be a very small amount?
Not at all. And honestly, it doesn't even take necessarily purely stagnant water. I was doing a service at a store here in town, and it just rained. And I looked in a 5-gallon bucket. The water was clear. It wasn't murky and gross and dank. And I saw wrigglers in there. Okay. So it had probably had some stagnant water before and then got filled up with the fresh stuff. But they're still loving it.
Wow.
Yeah. So we do services for these guys. We go through and we apply a chemical mist to foliage around the home. Again, we try to avoid applying this anywhere near flowers for the pollinators situation. But we're trying to hit the undersides of these leaves because that's where mosquitoes tend to hang out when they're not flying around or when they're not biting us. So we try to get them to where they're going to lay in this chemical when they're resting. Again, unknowingly, they've hit it. Once they've got that on their body, they're not very long for this world. And just a little fact about mosquitoes, the female mosquito is the only mosquito that actually will, quote, bite you. They need a blood meal for egg production. So if you just got bit, you got a female who's going to go off and lay more eggs somewhere close by.
Wow, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess another category, you might call it, are spiders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can you tell us about, I mean, are there good spiders? Or are they good to have around? And why would that be? And which ones are not good? That sort of stuff.
So basically every spider is beneficial. They are out there to eat other insects, and you know, a lot of flying insects, but they get caught in the webs, and that's how they get their meal. But there are also predatory spiders out there, like the wolf spider, common, you know, we know as the grass spider, but everybody knows what a wolf spider is. They can be big and mean looking and everything, but they're not interested in humans. They're interested in other bugs. The two big ones that we have to worry about around here in central Kentucky are going to be the black widow spider and the brown recluse spider. Both of them are venomous, which means
we all know about them.
Yes.
We've heard that since we were kids.
Yeah. You can go up on Google and Google spider bites or brown recluse bites and stuff. So, both of those are not necessarily desirable by homeowners usually to have around the home, but they tend not to live in the areas where we live. They prefer quiet spaces, spaces that don't have a lot of wind and activity around there. They don't like to be disturbed. So they tend to hide. And a lot of people won't even know they have an issue until they, you know, go into a crawl space or get up into an attic or, you know, places where stored materials are that don't get disturbed very long or very often. Those are good hiding places for them. But they still eat insects. They're still a beneficial arachnid to have around.
So how do you treat for those two particular ones, brown recluse and black widow?
Basically, you just got to find where they are and either eliminate those hiding places or make sure that you're getting a good liquid treatment down into their hiding places or directly onto the spider themselves.
And is that part of your routine, normal service to do applications for those?
Yeah. So you know, the four season service that we provide works very well on spiders as part of the program. The black widows and the brown recluses fall outside of that service just because it can be a little more intensive to try and find where they are and actually get the applications down to them. But we utilize a dust formulation of an insecticide for spiders, again, trying to get them down to where they tend to build their webs and hang out the most so they can come in contact with this and it'll cut through the cuticle of their exoskeleton and kill them. Don't see it too much around residential homes very often. Farther out towards the country you get.
Right.
So a lot of these newer neighborhoods on the outskirts of town where it used to be a big cow field or something like that, you may be a little more susceptible to finding those in and around your home. The biggest thing to do is to not like freak out about them. They're only going to bite you if they feel threatened. So if you're trying to handle them, they may end up biting you. But just like anything, if you're very gentle, I mean, you can have a black widow walk on your hand with no issues.
No, I really can't.
You wouldn't do that? No. I mean, we can try aversion therapy.
You might think I could, but no, I really wouldn't.
That's too bad.
I've known you for years, and I don't think that would ever happen.
So, I mean, the majority of spiders around here are very beneficial. They're just unsightly with the webs and things like that. So it can take away from the look of the home or it's just not preferred.
Is there anything to signal by them putting up a web in the same place over and over again?
Usually it means that they're getting good insects flying through there and getting caught in their web. So
probably why mine is on the front door.
Right. Like at my house, I have an old metal awning over the back door. And for years I've had spiders that will build out there because I have a motion sensor light in the back and it's super bright. And so these spiders end up knowing after a while you build a web here, you're going to get fed. And I love watching them. I mean, I love watching them grow from a tiny little spiderling to these great big, you know, spiders that hang out back there. I'll catch a moth if I can, throw it in the web form, you know, kind of feed them. You know, they're playing
with them.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Orb weavers are probably one of the ones that you'll find most on the exterior right near a light source. They seem to be bright enough to realize, hey, the food comes to me this way.
You know, one other thing that is pretty common, I don't know if it's indigenous just to this area, a lot of people are finding centipedes in their bathrooms. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, centipedes are indigenous to this area. The ones we get the call for the most are called the house centipede. And what did we learn about entomologists here recently? They're called that because you're
in the
house.
We're paying attention here.
Yeah, yes. Found it in the house. What should I call it?
Right. So they are recognizable. A lot of people think that they're a radioactive spider of some sort, you know, because they've got all these weird, funky looking legs. It doesn't look like a normal centipede that you'd see outside. But these are actually a beneficial insect as well. They are hunters, they are predators, and they will go after spiders. They will eat them. They'll hunt down other little insects like, you know, beetles that might invade, like the black ground beetle. We get a lot of calls for the black ground beetle this time of year, and they come in under doors and things like that, and they just show up in the home. People think they have roaches. They don't. The house centipede will actually hunt those guys down and eat them. So, again, kind of like spiders outside or inside, they're not necessarily desirable, even though they're providing a benefit to you.
Right.
They're kind of free pest control. But, again, you feed them well and the population can boom out of control. So they tend to hang out in the cooler areas of the home, basements, places like that, and then they'll show themselves occasionally upstairs or coming out of bathrooms. We think, you know, a lot of people ask why they're in the bathrooms. It tends to be cooler in a bathroom, but they can also follow the pipe chases and cracks and crevices at baseboards and emerge from underneath the sink cabinet and places, the toilet even, and come out and explore the home from there.
I've heard they're very familiar with their faces and use like five of the arms, go, hey.
Yeah.
Right.
This High is five. The featured business of the week on LM Communications Media. This week we're speaking with Matt Christensen of Truly Nolan Pest Control and Critter Control of Lexington.
Well, you know, let's talk more about Matt. We just went through a whole litany of Truly Nolan kind of pest management and control. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit more this time of year, particularly, I think, on the critter control side.
Absolutely.
For example, you know, what's the difference between a vole and a mole?
Okay, that's a great question. You can identify them many different ways. If you're going to identify them physically by actually looking at them, a mole ends up being about 3 to 4 inches long, maybe a little bit longer. They're a very robust body, probably about 3 to 4 inches in circumference. They're very dark gray fur. And I've had to pick up moles before, and it is some of the softest fur you will ever feel. Mm. I mean, it's luxurious. But these guys have a pointy snout, and if you look at their face, it looks like they don't have eyes or ears. They actually do, but it's buried beneath the fur that's on their face because they live underground. 99.9% of their time from birth to death is spent underground, okay? So that helps keep the dirt out of their eyes and ears. A vole is a rodent, so they actually have a mouse-like appearance to them, okay? Now, if you're going to go off of feeding habits, moles are insectivores. They feed off of subterraneous beetles, and things like that, grubs, 95% of their diet consists of earthworms. So they actually love the earthworm so much that they will eat that over any other insect. Okay. A vole is a vegetarian. They prefer plants. So when you have a mysterious gnawing or leaves coming up missing on low-hanging branches and things like that, sometimes it's from the vole.
No kid.
They can also burrow underground. They typically, you know, will utilize mole tunnels more often, but they will feed on bulbs and subterranean roots. So if you have a flower or a plant mysteriously dying, if you pull it out, you might find that the root system's been severely damaged by a vole.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I have a kid who, one of my children, is a vegan. What's the equivalent if we go mole and then vegetarian for the vole? Is there a vegan opportunity?
I don't know if they delve that deep into it. You know, if you're going to cut out dairy and completely. You got Matt, the hierarchy down.
Yeah, Matt, what are some of the things that, you know, common things that people can do to keep the wildlife from getting into their homes? And, you know, I've been a customer for a long time, and your dad has rescued so many raccoons and squirrels out of our house. I think he's probably lost count.
Right. You know, there's common ways for animals to get up onto the house. One of the most common ways would be if you have large trees with branches overhanging either in contact with the roof or very close to the roof. Squirrels, raccoons, you know, those kind of animals can climb up that tree, lickety-split, crawl out on the branch, and then just walk right out onto your roof.
Right.
And then they'll try and find a place to get in, either a loose soffit, a louvered vent, you know, gable end vent or something like that that may be compromised. You know, raccoons, they can create the damage themselves if they want to. But, you know, best thing to do is walk around your house. Look up on the roof. If you have a chimney and it doesn't have any chimney cap on it, that's a place that raccoons will prefer to use in the wintertime. Females will give birth to a litter and keep them up there above the smoke box. And it's a safe place for them. Check your crawl space doors if you have a crawl space. If it's in disrepair, get it fixed. It's real easy for an animal to walk on the ground and then walk right into your crawl space. Everything from cats to raccoons, possums, mice, rats, you know, all groundhogs. We find groundhogs inside of crawl spaces sometimes. So, you know, just check and see if there's anything that's in disrepair. If there is, you may want to have us come out and inspect first, because you don't want somebody to close up those holes and then unwittingly close a raccoon inside. Because
they get very feisty at that.
They get upset when their door has been shut, and they will try to find another way out. And sometimes that only way out is into your home. Right. And so that's a scary proposition. So,
talking about raccoons, how many babies on average do raccoons have?
On average, so I start off by saying that the average female raccoon can have anywhere from 2 to 7 babies in a litter, and that gets everybody's eyes real wide.
Yeah.
The average is 4, sometimes 5, but most of the time we end up finding a litter of 4, you know, across the board. They can have 2 litters a year. It's not very common, but it does happen. And already in August, we have found newborn raccoons Wow. here in the Lexington area. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, so you know, how do we know? How can we tell that there's, you know, critters in or out?
Noise is going to be one of the biggest ones. I always tell folks, if it's the middle of the night, if it's 2 a.m, and it sounds like I am up in your attic walking around, you have a raccoon. Okay, and there's stories out there. You'd be shocked, but there are plenty of people who will actually call the police. Because they feel like, or they think somebody's breaking in through the attic somehow. And the cops will go out there and they'll get up in the attic and, get their head up there and they're face to face with a raccoon and they just come right back down.
Yeah,
they say,
bet.
Call critter control. Yeah. We can't handle this. So noise is one of the biggest ones. Whenever I go into a home, if they have pets, I'll say, does your pet ever, key in on a specific spot? Like everybody's probably seen a cat. When they know there's a mouse or something in a wall, they will stare at that wall intently for hours if they have to. Pets never lie. Another person or someone else that lives in the household that never lies is kids. Kids will know more than the homeowners will. Mm-hmm. They hear those noises. They can hear little scratchings and things like that. So I trust them, above sure. above secondhand stories from the adults sometimes. But noises. The kids and the pets will always tell us what it is. But if you have odd smells, maybe coming from the attic or coming up from the crawl space, it's worth your time to have us come out and do an inspection. Just a quick story. This was probably like 15 years ago. I went out to an elderly couple's home. They had a horrible smell in the house. And they thought they had a dead animal in the crawl space. I go out, get in the crawl space, and I immediately see that there's probably about 2 inches of standing water down there, which is not good. I was going to tell them to get a sump pump installed, blah, blah, blah. Crawling through there, I started noticing it wasn't just water, but there was this odd paper-looking stuff in there as well. I went over to their sewer line. Their sewer line had exploded, essentially. There's a great big hole on top, kind of like you ever seen Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah.
Remember the hole created to get into that tunnel?
Absolutely.
This looked the same way. They had sewage.
Andy Dufresne.
In this case, these folks had sewage in their crawl space, and that's what was causing the smell. So, it was, for my business, it wasn't good because I couldn't offer them anything, but it was good for them because they had somebody come out and inspect and find out what the real issue was. Yeah. Now, to get back to the animal odors, that's created by their feces and their urine. They will pee and poop wherever they are, and when that builds up enough, the odors do get pretty bad, especially in an attic this time of year.
Oh yeah,
that heat exacerbates the smell, and it will spread. Whew, it's not a good thing.
Talking about getting animals into your house. Mm-hmm. One Father's Day, I remember this like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. My cat loved my daughter. Mm-hmm. My daughter didn't know why the cat would bring chipmunks mm-hmm. and little squirrels and stuff like that up to her room. Well, on one Father's Day, she goes, "Dad," I said, "Yeah, sweetie. There's a squirrel in my room." I went, "The cat there?" "Yep." Took us 2 hours to get that sucker out of there. Yeah. One of the best Father's Day we ever had.
Yeah, there you go. Memorable,
well,
right?
One other thing that we're talking about bats, or bats in the attic. Mm-hmm. How do we know they're there, and what do we do about that?
Okay. Bats can be a little bit tricky to deal with this time of year, but how do you know you have them? Again, odors. Bad odors. If you go up into your attic to get something out of storage and you notice what most people will say, they think they have mice up there. If you have droppings in large mounds, it's usually going to be bats because mice don't pee and poop in the same place every time. They'll go wherever they happen to stop. So usually one of those two situations, the smells or the feces. Now, sometimes you can hear them scratching inside of the walls as well. So that's how most people will come to know they have some kind of an issue. They'll have us come out, we do an inspection, we try to determine, if you have a colony in there. Now, if you have a bunch of bats inside of your attic, that's usually going to be a maternal colony that are raising their young. Bats give birth right about the end of spring. The young are growing up during the summertime, and there's a reason for that. The hot, humid conditions inside of an attic are perfect for baby bats. Yeah. The mothers can fly out at night and go hunting like they normally do, and those babies can stay up there, and they don't have to worry about them freezing to death or anything like that. If this scenario were to happen in December, there'd be no survival. Right. So it also presents kind of a sticky situation because bats have a protection period from May 15th to August 15th. And what that means is it is not recommended that companies like ours do evictions. We go through a process of sealing up the gaps and cracks around your home, screening vents, things like that, chimney caps, and leaving their main entry points open so that we can install an eviction valve. This allows those bats, when the time is appropriate, to exit the structure, but they cannot get back in.
Right.
We don't trap bats. We don't kill bats. Bats are amazingly beneficial to us. People that hate mosquitoes should love bats.
Right.
They eat anywhere from 2 to 4 times their body weight a night in insects, flying insects. Right. So they're very beneficial. We don't want to kill them. We do not kill them except for one situation. If we find that a bat is in a home and they call us out there to pick it up, we will euthanize it and take it for rabies testing.
Right.
We do that for every bat that is found inside of a home or business, but especially overnight. The fear is of rabies being transmitted by bats. Now, we have those reports every year locally. A rabid bat has been found in whatever neighborhood. I can say that 99% of the bats that we have had tested over the last 15, 20 years have all been negative for rabies.
Right.
So there's a very low, I mean, I'm not going to say there's a low chance, but there's a smaller chance that you're going to get rabies from bats than you would any other animal.
Gotcha. You know, this has been fascinating. We're sort of at the end of our time here. Mm-hmm. Tell me what kind of person actually works for Critter Control.
We are always looking for, I guess one of the easiest ways to imagine this would be like a farmer's mentality. We're out there working in all seasons, you know, winter, spring, summer, fall. So you could go out one day and it could be sunny and blazing, 95 degrees and hot. And then the next day it's a beautiful day like today, a little bit cooler. Sometimes you get rained on, snowed on, whatever. But we're looking for people that are not afraid to work in all the weather, have great customer service skills. You know, they're personable. They can talk to people. They can talk to them about the issues that they're experiencing in their homes and make them feel at ease that we're going to get the job done right for them.
Yeah, you're really going to want to have confidence in the person who comes to assist you when you think you have one of these problems. Mm-hmm.
Well, we look at it that, you know, our clients are calling us to come out there and help them. They are paying us money to come out and assess the situation.
Right.
And we owe them the best inspection that we can find. We may have one page of recommendations on repairs. We may have 4 pages. You know, I've never gotten upset that a client got upset that we gave them too many options to protect their home.
Right.
But, you know, we want them to be bright, obviously, articulate, willing to learn, because there's a lot that you have to learn about the biology of all these different animals that we deal with on a daily basis. And, again, you got to be able to convey that knowledge to the homeowner in a way that makes them feel safe and secure that they've chosen the right company to come out there and remove the animals and repair or replace those areas that need to be protected. And we have all kinds of different options to protect the home. We offer chimney caps. We can screen vents, install new foundation vents, close up holes. You know, we do whatever we can to make the home safe again. And then we also offer preventative work.
Well, we know our listeners out there are now asking the question, how in the heck do I get a hold of these guys? I got to talk to them.
I tell you what, the easiest way is to call us locally at 859-278-3747. That's for our Critter Control franchise. And then for the Truly Nolan side of the business, that number is 859-277-0716.
Perfect.
We always learn something when you come.
Oh, yeah.
That's my job.
Amongst all these things we do, we love it when you guys come.
Yeah.
It is fascinating.
It is. A lot of people think of pest control, and they think of, you know, old school, come in, spray some stinky chemicals so that
the
customer knows you were there. But it's really a different world out there for pest control.
Back when I was a kid, it was put everything up. The guy's coming by.
That's right. Better get your toys off the floor.
Oh, it's going to be stinky.
Yeah.
This has been the Featured Business of the Week on LM Communications. Our guests, Matt Christensen of Truly Knowing Pest Control and Critter Control of Lexington. Join us next time for the next Featured Business of the Week on LM Communications Media.